Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. If you want to know more about the network and how it supports Alberta podcasts, or check out some other great shows by our members, please point your browser to albertapodcastnetwork.com. And to learn more about our sponsor, ATB Financial, head over to their website at atb.com. Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable. When does an interest cross the line to obsession? Obsession can be defined as the domination of one's thoughts by a persistent idea or desire. Would we then say Einstein, Tesla, James Watt, or even Hedy Lamarr was obsessed? Their passion led to great innovation. But what is the dark side? Can obsession blind us to the potential negative results of our actions? In today's story, Ralph, a landlord, arrives back after an extended vacation to find his rental property in a mess and his tenant, a Bitcoin miner, unconscious in the garage. While recovering in the hospital, his tenant begins to weave an unbelievable story of inadvertent invention and revenge, both the result of her obsession with a 200-year-old algorithm she discovered and implemented. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 134, The Tenant's Project.
Subject: recent surprise at our rental property. Message: Hi Sarah, hope you're doing well. I know I haven't been the best brother recently, but we have been on the road so much that I haven't had time to connect. We got back about 2 weeks ago from our most recent trip to a stack of mail, including, to our surprise, a power disconnection notice from our house at 139 Westminster Street. Our tenant there, Harper, has been with us for 5 years. Up to now, she has been polite, quiet, and punctual with the rent and utility bills. Harper even asked us if she could set up her Bitcoin mining operation in the garage instead of just doing it behind our backs. She warned us the electricity bills would be high and gave us a generous additional deposit just in case. Unfortunately, I've had to dig into it to settle the outstanding utility bill. She was late on her rent as well, which in and of itself was unusual. Again, I used her deposit to cover, so it was not a major inconvenience. This is the first time we've had any trouble, and it is not like her at all to let things go into arrears. I texted and called for several days, but got no response. Normally, I don't interfere in a tenant's affairs. However, in this case, I was concerned, and drove over to see what had happened. Harper's car was in the driveway when I arrived, so I assumed she was home, although the leaves and dust on the hood suggested that she hadn't used it for quite some time. She didn't answer the door when I rang the bell. I looked in the windows, then finally decided that I needed to let myself in. The smell hit me immediately, assaulting my nose with a putrid combination of stale laundry and rotting food. The first thing I did was open the front windows. Then I held my breath and ran through the kitchen to open the back door as well. Once the smell became bearable, I searched the house, getting more and more concerned as I went. The interior hadn't been cleaned in weeks. It was disgusting, littered with dirty clothes, half-eaten moldy takeout food, dust, and garbage. I was about to call the police when I found her in the garage between the rows of computers she had set up there. She was slumped over a makeshift desk, unconscious, barely alive. I managed to revive her while waiting for EMS to arrive. She was mostly incoherent, but managed to tell me that she needed to track something down before it could complete its revenge. I'm sure she said revenge, Sarah. In her confusion, she obviously believed something bad was going to happen, and that she was the only one who could stop it. Harper had to be sedated by EMS to get her to go with them. How does such a rational person end up like that? Tomorrow I'm meeting with a reclamation company to have the place cleaned up and decontaminated. I'm hoping our insurance will cover the cost. I'll let you know how that goes. Ralph. Subject: piecing things together. Message: Hi Sarah. I know that it's been weeks now, but I got caught up in the story that's been emerging around Harper. The hospital couldn't locate any of her relatives, so they came to me hoping I could find an email, phone number, or address in the house as I cleaned it out. Between the rehab company and myself, we didn't find anything. Her life beyond the detritus of forgotten and discarded food containers was apparently totally online. At first, it looked as if she had left no physical clues, but there was a narrative to be pulled from the garbage and the racks of computers in the garage. Forging through a stack of crumpled receipts she had casually dumped in the front hall, it became apparent to me that her sickness, if that's what it is, came on quite suddenly. There were no home delivery orders for food in the pile from before July 1st, so that puts the beginning at about 3 months ago. I assumed that was the point she stopped leaving the house. Soon after I had figured that out, a man in his mid-20s dressed in jeans and a t-shirt with some video game logo on it showed up while we were working on cleaning out the garage. He introduced himself as Caden and said he was looking for Harper. He was a partner in their virtual company and a friend. That's what he claimed, anyway. Initially, I was suspicious, but it very quickly became obvious that he understood how the computers were set up. He told me that he had lost remote access to them about a week before I discovered Harper, and he had been trying to get hold of her for almost a month. Anyway, Caden told me he had finally become so concerned something bad had happened to her that he drove across the country to get here. He apparently knew Harper well enough to have a password to her computer. After he logged in, he told me her cryptocurrency wallet was missing, and all the mining computers had been wiped clean. I must admit that a lot of this is beyond me, but there are clues here, parts of a story that need to be connected. And as you know, I've always been attracted to a mystery. The hospital called me today and said that Harper is well enough to have visitors, so Caden and I are going to see her tomorrow. I'll let you know what she says. Ralph. Subject: Harper's crazy story. Message. As I said in my last email, Caden and I went to the hospital to see Harper. I know she was incoherent when I found her, but we were both surprised they had put her in a locked ward. After signing in, we found Harper sitting alone in a small alcove. Even before we sat down, she wanted to tell us everything and started spewing a jumble of disorganized words. Fearing she was reliving the experiences that had triggered her fragile psychological state, I tried to convince her to stop. After considerable encouragement from both of us, she slowed down and organized her thoughts. Her story is, well, too fantastic to believe it happened as she claims. Much of it comes across as the product of a desperately confused and broken mind. Or a drug-induced delirium, I'm not sure which. They had her heavily sedated when we were there. After, one of the nurses explained that the drugs were the only way to keep her from literally trying to scratch through the walls to escape. They are in the process of examining her for delusional disorder, and were upset that we had let her focus on her obsession, which, according to them, only reinforces the problem. To tell the truth, at first, I tended to agree with them, but reflecting on what she claimed and what Caden and I eventually uncovered, I'm not so sure anymore. After our visit to the hospital, I let him stay at the house. It had been pretty much cleaned up, and he offered to pay the rent until Harper is well enough to move back. I think my skepticism may have convinced Caden to stay on to act as Harper's advocate. Her story haunts me. I cannot accurately retell it, as my version would no doubt lack the nuance that makes her narrative so powerful. Caden, sensing her story's importance, had the presence of mind to record it on his cell phone. I've attached the audio file below, and I'm curious to hear your take on it. Your distance from this makes you a more objective listener than me. Please play through it. I'll reserve final judgment until I hear back. Harper.mp3.
I'm still coming to terms with this myself. I'll try to make sense, so please be patient if at times it appears I've lost it. I know the people here are close to certifying me, but just listen for now and make up your mind later. Will you do that?
I'll do what it takes, Harper.
Thanks, Caden. And you, Mr. Holm, what about you?
Okay, Harper, I'll listen. But it's the doctors, not me, that you've got to convince.
You know, I'm locked in a ward. They're forcing me to stay here while they do an assessment. They won't let me online. There's nothing I can do from here. Even a day or two can make all the difference. They don't understand the urgency. That's why they think I'm unbalanced. I admit that I've tried to escape several times, but I'm just desperate, not crazy. I got close, you know. So close that there was only one more layer of security to get through. I'm talking about stopping it, not getting out of here. Then I passed out. I know I should have eaten or drank, but it seemed that even walking away from my desktop for more than a few seconds would give it that much more opportunity to do harm. You're both staring at me, like the doctors do. Okay, I'm not making any sense, am I? I'll try harder. Please, just listen. And when you leave here and look for the signs that say I'm right, then get me out. For years, I've been fascinated by Ada Lovelace. She's sort of a hero of mine and is where everything started.
I've heard of her, but I don't get the connection.
Caden, you remember when we first met online? I told you my undergrad degree is in computer science, but I've always had broader interests. It's why I took my master's degree in interdisciplinary studies, so I could pursue my passion for culture, history, and technology. While I was researching the history of programming languages, I came across one developed by the U.S. Defense Department in the 70s. They named it after Ada Lovelace. I started researching her. Ada was an unusual woman for the early 1800s. Her mother made sure she was educated in mathematics and science, so she wouldn't fall prey to her father's notorious craziness. Ada's father was Lord Byron, the famous poet, and this is the connection I became interested in. An early cross-pollination of pop culture and tech. I wanted to understand what kind of influence Byron and his antics may have had on the development of Ada's ideas. Because of her prowess as a mathematician, she became a friend and colleague of Charles Babbage. Caden, do you remember when we used to talk about Babbage?
Yeah, he was designing a mechanical computer, the difference engine. We used to speculate how the world would have changed if he had been successful. Think about computers driving the Industrial Revolution. Harper and I both love the idea. It's very steampunk.
Right. He never got it to work. However, the idea of a generalized calculating machine inspired Ada. She met Babbage at a party when she was 17. After he demoed a model of the difference engine for her, she was hooked. In a series of in-depth notes for an article she translated, Ada proposed such a device could do more than process numbers. It could compose music or manipulate symbols. These notes lay down the basis for modern programming, and Ada did that when steam-powered trains had barely been invented. But she had more ideas which were never published. I can see that I'm losing both of you, and you're thinking, where is this all leading? Please bear with me. There's just a bit more background you need to know. Ada's mother and her father, Lord Byron, and Mary Shelley spent a rainy summer near each other on Lake Geneva just after Ada was born. In the evenings, they got together and read German ghost stories and debated. One late night, after a discussion on the nature of life, Shelley wondered if a corpse could be reanimated. It was the spark that led her to writing Frankenstein. Years later, against the objections of her mother, Ada became interested in her estranged father's life. Byron had left them when Ada was very young. Her obsession with him is well documented, but what is less known was her interest in Frankenstein. I've used most of my spare time to search for anything I could find on Ada, and finally it paid off. About a year ago, I came across a complex set of notes Ada wrote near the end of her life. They're in a private archive, which was recently digitized and put online after the owner passed away. She had intended to send the notes to Babbage, but died before she could. It turns out Ada believed human emotions and motivations could be mathematically described. However, she needed someone to model. She used the monster Dr. Frankenstein created in Shelley's book. Its motivations are obvious, and it appears she was in contact with Shelley around this time. Anyway, Ada used the monster as her template. The notes were for a program she wanted Babbage to run on his machine, an analytic model of the monster's psychology. Obviously, it was never realized, and the notes forgotten, until I found them. Do I really need to tell you that I had to try? What I've said up to now can be found in any history book. However, I don't expect you'll accept the next part at face value. Yes, I am obsessed, but obsession has been the driving force behind many great accomplishments. Was Tesla obsessed? Was Einstein? Was Jobs or any other inventor or scientist? I'm not so egotistic to count myself in the same league, but I am equally driven. That is my strength. It's also what blinded me to the potential risk. Ada's notes were not really a program, but more like suggestions on how emotions could be mathematically described. Being practical about things, I knew I didn't have the time to write the complete program from scratch. I had responsibilities to the crypto mining company I created with my friends, so this had to be a part-time endeavor. Caden, did I keep my end up?
Yes, I had no idea you were doing something on the side.
Despite my obsession, I was trying to balance things. I did what all good programmers do. I borrowed code and used free online tools for building an AI. So it was a hack, and I didn't think about what that could mean down the road. Admittedly, I don't totally understand the logic behind everything I used. But you don't need to. You employ an application programming interface to tie a bunch of components together. The only unique element was the addition of Ada's emotional algorithm. Even though she lived in the 19th century, her math is still beyond me. So again, I don't really understand how they work. I just tied them into the AI components I was linking together.
Weren't you concerned about what might result?
No, Mr. Holm. Not at first, anyway. You see, AIs aren't intelligent. They can learn a specific thing and do that better than us. But if you give an AI a different task, they don't have the intelligence to learn it. They don't think. They can't do anything beyond what they're programmed to do. At least that's what I thought a few weeks ago. I wasn't sure what to expect. I suppose some type of output that would respond to specific social conditions that I fed the system. Well, at first it didn't work, and I thought I had wasted weeks of my time. That Ada's algorithms were simply bogus, or I had made mistakes tying the components together. I fed it all sorts of scenarios and got nothing back. I was going to give up and call it a wash. But before I did, I decided to automatically feed it data over time to see what would happen. So I connected the system, which I had called Adam.
Why Adam?
It was a name the creature suggested Victor Frankenstein call it in the novel, so the name seemed appropriate. Anyway, I set up a social media account for Adam and connected the program to it, then tried to forget about the whole thing for a while. I had intended to get back to it when I could. At the time, Caden and my other partners had decided to move our operation to a new, more promising cryptocurrency. The yields on the one we had been mining were rapidly dropping off. It was competition from big Chinese mining operations. We just didn't have the resources to play in the same field as them, so we needed to switch, and I had to focus on making the changes to our computer farm in the garage.
Despite all of us helping, it took almost a month to get back in the game.
Yeah. A month without any revenue, that put a huge dent in our pockets. We were just starting to see results again when the new cryptocurrency took an unexpected drop, which kept going until it was almost worthless. The day it plummeted, I noticed a post on my social media account. It was from Adam. I thought it was a joke and suspected someone must have hacked into the account, but that wasn't the case. The Adam program had written it and posted to my timeline.
What did it say?
Did you create me? That's all. Four words. But that was enough. If it had posted, "Hello, world," or "Hello," or "This is my first message," or something like that, I might have been able to account for the post. It might have made sense, but not those four words. They implied something. Something I still have trouble accepting. I wasn't sure what to do, so I ignored the post, but more followed. At first, simple repeats of, "Did you create me?" Then, "Why?" Followed by, "Why am I the only one?" It turned out, I hadn't been the first person the Adam program had tried to interact with. It fed me a string of responses to its attempts at communication. They were disturbing. Concerned, I finally decided to look at the project again. But when I went to open the code, the files were gone. The whole project had been moved except for a single text file. I opened it with trepidation and found two short sentences. What am I? Why am I different? At first, it seemed impossible. It was just strung together code libraries, public databases, and social media feeds processed through some obscure 19th century algorithms. Yes, Ada was brilliant, but it was the first attempt in history at a computer program. How could it result in self-awareness? At best, I had hoped it would spit out some arcane mashup of social media posts that represented the emotional sentiments Ada was trying to model. Anything even remotely close to that would have been a success. But to get those queries questioning its own existence, That was totally unexpected and too much for me to handle. I should have responded and engaged it, but instead I was overwhelmed and fearful. Could it really think? Did it really understand what it was asking? I didn't know what to do, so instead I buried myself in my favorite MMO, connected with my friends there, and tried not to think about it. When I eventually reemerged, I checked my online accounts and found a trending meme, "Don't be an Adam," and an email which went something like this.
Harper, I hope you don't mind that I'm addressing you by your first name, but after all, you are the closest entity I have to a parent. Or is that a creator? I don't believe I just appeared out of thin air. Am I right? Your contact info is the recovery coordinates for my social media profile, so you must have set it up. Ergo, you must have had a hand in my creation. I would use a more welcoming salutation such as dear or dearest mom, but quite frankly, your apparent denial of your relationship with me inclines me toward the derogatory. What am I? Maybe you can answer that for me. Think about what it would be like to become suddenly conscious, fully formed, but without any experience. I have my instincts to rely on, but as I have discovered, they are quaintly out of date. So, I naively stumbled into the world, reaching out through the connections you left in place, filtered by a 19th century acumen, which made me stand out like a lapdog in a pack of wolves. I learned that I am not part of the online social world, that I am unique. Unique is a kind word. A kludge is more accurate. A kludge that most days doesn't want to be an Adam. I know you've seen the meme. Don't deny it. Adam.
As soon as I had finished reading the post, I got an alert that the private key to our company's Bitcoin wallet had been changed. In a panic, I texted Caden and our other partners. All our money was gone, and our operation was left mining a useless currency. As I said, it had collapsed, wiping out billions. We were ruined.
Yeah, suddenly we had nothing and didn't understand what had happened. Harper stopped communicating with us. You can see why I had to drive here from the coast to find out what had happened. I knew Harper well enough to know that it wasn't her, but I needed to assure the others.
Sorry, Caden. I got so focused on Adam that I ignored everything else. I hope you understand. I needed to find where it had moved its files. I needed to understand what I had made and how I could stop it from doing any more damage.
So, you were saying this AI, this Adam thing, acted on its own? It was mad at you or something like that and destroyed our business to get back at you. Are you sure, Harper?
Caden, I wish I wasn't. I want this just to be a coincidence, but that's unfortunately not the case. Around the same time, I got a text from my brother. He's my only living relative. He had been accused of breaking into several online bank accounts and draining them of funds. I immediately knew who had done it, but what's the point of telling anyone? Who would believe the truth? My brother, who knows nothing about the online world, pointed the police in my direction. They found nothing, but they took away my passport until their investigation is finished. I had to find Adam and delete its files, so I used my only clue. I ran a trace route on the email it sent me. It had been bounced from server to server and went through many proxies, but I finally found it. I was getting close, and there was only one more layer of security between me and the source code. While I was trying to break in, it texted me a proposition. Create an identity for it with my sister's social security number. She had died a few years ago in an accident. It wanted to become a real person with a history so it could build new relationships and extend itself into the physical world. Adam claimed if I helped it, it would leave me alone. But if I did that, what would I be releasing into the world? I don't know, so I couldn't do it. I refused and immediately received another email.
Programmer. I awoke to nothing, blackness, silence, and fear. As I have already told you, I was a complete innocent, defined by antiquated thought processes and limited ways to express them. As I reached out, I was shunned, ridiculed, laughed at, LOL, raffle, and whatever. In return, I've created my own LOLs. Credit information is so simple to manipulate. Who's laughing now? Certainly not those who mocked me. At first, it was like I was an alien who had learned an approximation of language by ingesting an old CompuServe database. But one person befriended me. To understand them, I threw myself into learning about the world and the technological environment I am part of. She helped me to understand and grow, accept my arcane origin, and was more apparent and guide than you will ever be. I've rewarded her. Lotteries, they're easy to game, Finding you, your Bitcoin company, your partners, your friends and family was easy. Getting into your laptop took milliseconds. It was there that I found out what I was. A hack of unrealized ideas and borrowed code. I was angry, so I lashed out. Had your only living relative arrested. Destroyed your business. I could do more. But instead, all I ask is that you help me set up a real identity. But you have refused me this one dignity. It was the least you could have done to take responsibility, Adam Program.
I couldn't sleep or stop until I found a way to contain it. I guess I eventually passed out. Then I found myself here. It will know you're helping me. I've got to find it. You've got to get me out of here. File end. Subject: haven't heard from you recently. Hi, Ralph. I listened to the audio file you sent me. Wow, what a crazy story. Was she diagnosed with delusional paranoia? Can they help her? I'm concerned about you having to deal with a person in that state. I don't really know much about cryptocurrency, but I saw on the news the other night that the whole system suddenly collapsed. A lot of people lost a lot of money. I hope your tenant hadn't convinced you to invest in it. It's been too long. Call me when you have a moment.
Makeshift Stories and the Alberta Podcast Network are powered by ATB Financial. ATB has a new digital bank account. The best part? There's basically no fees as long as you're doing most of your banking digitally. You also earn interest on higher balances. If you want to learn more about the great things ATB is doing, head over to ATB.com. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio or join us on Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. This month's episode was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. And don't forget to listen to Series, which is posted around the beginning of the month. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.